Grief is a heavy and vulnerable conversation to have. This platform is a safe place for all individuals to come share their life's journeys of surviving grief without judgment.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Ware, and I am the host of the QT Surviving Grief Podcast. I'd like to welcome you all, and I have a very special guest with me today. I've known this lady for quite some time. She's a local of Columbia, Tennessee, and she is community advocate, just all the things, honestly. So I would like to introduce to you guys Ms. Carla Walker.
Hey, everybody. Hey.
Welcome, Carla. Welcome. I'm glad you're here with me today. Thank you for accepting this invitation. I really appreciate it. I've always known you, but I would love to hear more about you and just all your experience and just all the wisdom that I know you embody. So thank you for being on today. But I want you to tell people a little bit about who Carla Walker is.
All right. So I am, like Tiffany stated, a Columbia native, been here all my life, born and bred, all 53 years. I am a single mother of three young men. They're all grown now. My youngest is 32. I am a mother that started life a little bit late, went and got my education from Columbia State Community College in 1990, graduated there 2002, went from there to Tennessee State University, got my degree in English. I thought I wanted to be an English teacher until I went to Pearl Cone High School and had a young lady to basically cuss me out. And I realized then that I did not want to be a teacher. So from there, I ended up with my career at the state of Tennessee, being a CPS investigator, did that for 8 years. Then God blessed me to be the resource linkage coordinator for 8 years. And that's just mainly meant that I was the face of DCS out in the community, covered 14 counties. And then after that, God blessed me again to upgrade me. So now I work for the Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth, where I'm an advocate for the community, an advocate for the juvenile justice family, kids, an advocate for my community as far as lawmakers, an advocate and a voice for the kids that are in that's in the foster care system. And I now have a nonprofit called JUMP, Just Understanding My Purpose. And so we're up and get net going. These are things that with JUMP, things I've been doing for a while now, but I'm just now putting it all under the same umbrella. So I'm very excited about that venture and finishing up school with my master's. So it's a lot of me, but one part of me. And main thing, I am a child of God, firm believer, and I know that he orders my step in everything I do. He's my health, he's my strength, and he's my redeemer. So that's Carla in a nutshell.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Carla. That was everything that you are, for sure. You definitely live a life of service, a life of advocacy, just, you know, for our community. And and definitely we'll get to the child of God portion of our interview too. And so thank you for just letting people know a little bit about who Carla Walker is. So I'd like to start our conversations off a little light, and this is something you probably are not prepared for, but I like to do a little icebreaker just to kind of break the ice and open up our discussion. So my question to you is on gratitude today. What touched your heart today?
Today, first of all, waking up, but I was able to, be in a room full of pastors, this morning. I was a part of the faith-based initiative, with the state of Tennessee, which is an initiative that the governor is putting together. So being in a room with pastors of like mind and wanting to help, making those connections, especially with pastors of color, to see them in the room, because sometimes they are left out. So to be able to see mm-hmm. them in the room, again, not having the crab mentality, but willing to work together to try to help the kids in the state of Tennessee. So that's what I was grateful for today, that I was even afforded the opportunity to do such a thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like you said, a lot of times we are left out of those rooms. So it's good you got to participate in that. And I'm sure it connected you with a lot of people as well, you know, just for, you know, everybody being purposeful in their own way. But even purposeful, but yet connected and having one goal, common goal and vision. So that's cool. Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah, thank you. I like how you threw in there first waking up, because that is definitely something to be grateful for.
Some don't make it.
We know. That's right. Yeah. Some don't make it. You know, that's some Quinn, your cousin, used to always, he would text me early in the morning sometimes. By the time he didn't got to work, he like, I was on the wake up list. You on the wake up list, especially if he ain't heard no from me. So I think about that and laugh now, but it's true. You know, if you woke up this morning, you're on the wake up list. So that is a blessing and definitely something to be grateful for. But anyway, okay, so we're gonna delve into a little bit of conversation. And one thing we talked a lot about, of course, we talked about grief and things like that. And we wanted to definitely take a moment to honor both of your parents have transitioned. And so we wanted to take a moment to honor them and honor their memory, their legacy. And it was Mr. and Mrs. Billy and Mary Walker. Mm-hmm. So I would just like for you to tell the people who yes. they were to you, just a little bit about them.
Okay. So growing up, I was the only girl and I had five brothers. So first of all,
God, and I know
my father, I'm gonna see how I can put this. He was a man of service. He was a man that would give his shirt to anybody. It was plenty of times that I woke up in the home and it would people be in the home that I didn't know that he done saw inside the street. They needed somewhere to sleep and he would bring them to the house so that they could have somewhere to sleep. My dad in the 70s and 80s, there was a baseball team here in Columbia for the adults called the Sluggers. So my dad was mm-hmm. the coach of the Sluggers baseball team that played at Fairview Park. My dad mm-hmm. was one that whenever they were in a bind, they would call. My mom, on the other hand, was the support behind my dad. So she was one of those that didn't say much, but when she did speak, mm-hmm. listen to what she had to say. So my daddy was the face, gotcha. But she was the voice, if that makes sense. They complimented gotcha. Each other. Yeah, they complimented each other. Before my father passed, I saw how strong my mother really was. Mm-hmm. And once he passed, I really saw her strength. Because soon after he passed, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. So she didn't have time to grieve him without going through her own thing. For me to see her strength and how she got through the death of her husband, who she was with for 20 something years, and have to deal with breast cancer, that really showed me her strength and how strong she was. So, and she was a survivor. She, you know, they were able to do, she was able to do chemo and radiation, and she lived like 10 more to 15 more years in remission. Wow. And so she did well. And so seeing that part of her made me want to emulate her in the strength that she had to be that strong for other people in the community as well as my family.
Gotcha. I like that, Carla. It's like you're a good combination of both of them. You know, you speak of your father's service in the community and how the strength of your mother. So I definitely see both of them displaying you for sure. And thank you for dropping that history about the Columbia baseball team, the Sluggers. Thank you for sharing that, because I don't know if I've ever really heard that story of that team. So I have to get with you about a little more information, history on that.
Because there was a lot of guys that played on the team, and I think it ended in the mid 80s. So it's one of those, like you said, hidden gems that was in the county that if you didn't grow up around here, you didn't know.
Gotcha. Well, with that being said, Carla, you know, one thing I've heard a lot of people say, you know, when they lose their parents or when their parents transition, I've heard people say like it, I felt like an orphan, like, you know, my soul is tied to these two people who came together to create me. And then it's like my soul is just tethered from this earth when they're both gone. Was that your experience? And I know it was some time from your dad passing and then your mom, which was more recent. But was that experience different for both of them? Was it the same? Or what's your thoughts behind it and your experience?
So for my dad, we expected it because he had brain cancer. So it didn't hurt any less, but we expected him to pass. And so he had a lot of things prepared for his passing. Okay. My mom, on the other hand, it happened suddenly. She was here today, gone today. And so I did feel like, oh my goodness, what am I to do now? It hurt because at that point I didn't know how to grieve. I mean, I had lost people that were close to me, but it's a difference when it's a parent. Me and my mom, we talked every day. So it was like, who do I talk to now? It was a thing of, I knew I was going to get a phone call every morning at 7 o'clock. The phone call stopped. When we were on our way to the grave site, because we had to have grave site service because it was during COVID. We buried her in 21. She died in December the 29th of 20. So we had to have her graveside service January the 7th, 21. It dawned on me as we was driving to the cemetery. I have no parents now. And so my boyfriend was riding in the car with me and I said, I'm an orphan. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have nobody now. I have no parent. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so that weighed heavy on my heart for many, 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 many months. And every now and then that creeps back up, because when you're used to having those phone calls every day and you don't get them, it's like, what do I do now? You know, there's a lot of great things that's about to happen in my life now. I can't call my parents and say, hey, this is what's going on. So still feeling that orphan feeling, to feel that I have no one, but I have an aunt and I have that I can call when I feel that way, but it's still not the love of your mom and dad. If that makes sense, they here for me, but they can't fill that void. So,
yeah. That makes sense, Carla. Yeah, because it's nothing like your parent. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, you can have aunts and other family members, and thank God, you know, they're in place to help support the journey. But it's different, I'm sure. You know, like I say, it's nothing like your parents. What is your journey to, or have you got to acceptance yet with the death?
And I have gotten to acceptance. It was a while before I got there. Me and God battled And when I say okay. we battled okay. to the point to where, and I'm just going to be honest. I was yeah. going to church. I was doing the role play. I go to church because I have to check off that box. You know what I'm saying? I was always in church, so I'm going to go to church. God was trying to talk to me, and I was like, I don't want to hear nothing you got to say. You took the only thing I had left. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. God and I battled. And the orphan thing was real. And one day I was sitting in the living room here at the house. And he came to me and said, "You are not alone. I'm here." I loved her wow. first. And wow. that just okay. hit with me because I was like, I'm being selfish. She was yours first. So I'm being very mm-hmm. selfish. So I got to get out of this selfish mode. And so mm-hmm. it took me a minute to get out of that selfish mode. Mm-hmm. But once I was able to release that, the pain of her not being here, it didn't completely leave, but it got easier. Because when we first buried mm-hmm. her, I could not go to the cemetery and put flowers on the grave because it was too much. I couldn't mm-hmm. go yeah. out there, you know what I'm saying? Because she's buried right beside my dad. So I couldn't go right. out there and say anything, you know, just look at their graves. I couldn't do that. So I would order flowers and have somebody else to go out there and do that. Now I can go out there, put flowers on their grave, you know, sit a little bit, meditate, you know, cry, mm-hmm. then cry. Yeah. But it has yeah. gotten it has gotten to the point to where I know she's in a better place.
Okay.
And that she is helping connect me and helping me navigate my life, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Because I can feel a presence sometimes. I can feel yeah. sometimes. So, or I can yeah. smell something that reminds me of her when I'm in a down, 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 down mood. I can smell something that reminds me of her, or I hear one of her old sayings. So I know mm-hmm. that she's still lurking, but not here physically, but in the spiritual realm.
Yeah. Spirit is so real, Carlin. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing Queen used to always say, you know, we're just spiritual beings having a human experience. Because like you say, your spirit never dies, your soul never dies. And so I'm sure that presence is comforting to you in, mm-hmm. you know, those moments. So whenever she touches down and, you know, from day to day, when you have those encounters. So that's, I'm glad to hear that, you know, other people feel, you know that that's a real thing. And it was something else I was going to say to something you said. But thank you for being honest and walking us through that journey of even like going to church and stuff, like even going to the cemetery. Like that stuff is very hard, you know, when we're dealing with grief. So I just appreciate your honesty.
And I mean, one of the things though, for me is I didn't like funerals anyway. I've only been to like 5 funerals.
And you said the funerals that you don't typically, you didn't really go to funerals.
No, I didn't because I was one of those that I wanted to remember people as they were in their happy state and not my last memory of them in a casket. And so having to, cause I always went to church. So that was just the norm, if that makes sense. I was always taught, you got to go to church. No matter what you're going through, you got to mm-hmm. go to church.
Yeah,
it does. You know what I'm saying? But just going and sitting in the back of the church, right. just saying, okay, today I went to church. That's it.
Yeah.
God, I don't want to hear none of you guys.
Yeah.
God, I don't want to hear none of you guys say. Yeah.
Not even receiving. Yeah. Yeah, right. you just there. You
absolutely
just existing. I can say I came, but I'm not even, nothing's right. even registering that's right. happening in the atmosphere.
And my pastor came to me and he said, you good? Because he called me boo. He said, you good, boo? I said, no, I ain't good. He said, what you mean you ain't good? You know, because he was always joking right. with me. I said, I'm not good. I said, I'm having a hard time. And he said, I just need you to understand the grieving process mm-hmm. never stops. It just gets easier. And I was like, I hear what you're saying, but just know I'm going to still be here, but don't ask me to do anything. And so, you know, just continue to go and hear and allowing them to love me through when I was going through my hardest time made me go back to say, okay, I'm here for a purpose. Let me receive what is being, what I need to get from here. So that helped out a lot. I mean, I was going. Every Sunday, going, crying, snotting, and all that stuff. I was going. But I was just taking off that box. And so when I got to the acceptance piece.
Yeah, you really have to change your perspective is what it sounds like. While you were just kind of existing, but over time, it kind of shifted.
Yeah. Since I allowed that to happen.
That's awesome, and I appreciate your honesty even in that, because a lot of people don't want to admit and your honesty with your pastor too. Like, no, I'm not good, because how many times do people ask us that and we be like, I'm good.
And lying,
you going through hell and high water and lying in the church. That's real.
But I love them for giving me that grace to go through it the way that I needed to. Because when people go to people and tell them, you've been grieving long enough, you don't know what that grief process is for them. Because for everybody, it is different. You know, some people can be like, I'm good, but then they're dying on the inside slowly. You know, they're contemplating saying, I want to be with that person. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say you need to get over it. Yeah. You can't say that, because everybody goes through it differently. I know people now, their significant other or their husband or their dad or parent have passed on and transitioned, and they're still grieving because they don't know how to let it go. So you know, everybody's process is different.
Oh, yeah.
And so I love them for
it. It is.
Go ahead.
Hurts matter. So don't discount someone's pain. Don't discount their grief. Don't, like you say, you know, you should be over this. It's been X amount of months, years, or whatever the case is.
Absolutely.
Like you say, every case is different. Well, what's the greatest lesson that your parents taught you, Carla? What do you think the greatest lesson
Treat people the way you want to be treated. Because I am a firm believer, and I got this from my dad a lot. You be kind to people, people be kind to you. You show yourself friendly, they'll be friends to you. You know, treat people the way that you want to be treated. You can't discount the way that somebody looks because you don't know their story. You can't discount what kind of car a person drives, because you don't know if that's the only thing that they got. So you treat people the way that you want to be treated, and God will bless you twofold because you're doing the things that you're supposed to be doing in His sight. So definitely the golden rule.
Yeah, amen to that. That is very true. So let me ask you this. What advice do you have for anyone that has lost a parent or both of their parents? Three of my cousins, they lost their mom last year in January. Mm-hmm. And it's been tough. What advice do you have for anyone who's lost a parent or both parents?
Remember their memories, remember them, the good times, but also grieve the way that you need to grieve. The grieving is not cookie cutter. You know, one cry and you're done. So grieve the way that you need to grieve. And Mm-hmm. Yeah, continue to remember their memories, but don't dwell in it, if that makes sense. Remember them, and but not just be stuck in that memory. If that, you know, so grieve how you need to grieve. Love them.
Yeah.
Keep them a part of your heart. And I've known some people that have made a shrine in their house for that person. You know what I'm saying? Kept the obituary, kept the flowers, kept a big picture. Uh-huh. It's almost like they're not so much worshiping them, but they're making a shrine for them. That is good, but it is best that you don't do that, because you will continue to walk into that and the grief process starts all over. So, because every time you walk back, you know what I'm saying? So you hold memories, you hold your memories here and here, but not make a shrine of it, because the more you mm-hmm. walk by, the more you will
right.
deal with, man, you know, so yeah, that's my
problem. Yeah. It can take you down an unhealthy path, Carla, for sure. And I know even for me, what I'm going through right now, you know, a lot of people, you know, I got so many gifts and, you know, the little churches and the chimes and, you know, just different things. And like all of that reminds mm-hmm. me of what I went through last year. So like it's currently right. put away for now until I'm able to even see that type Absolutely. Of stuff in my house. Because you know, it just takes you back, like you say, you fall mm-hmm. right back down into that. Got a little photo frame and right. like it's a digital one, so all my pictures, I had set it up that way thinking it was going to be helpful, me seeing our pictures, but it's not at all. So now it's turned right. around because I just can't handle it. So it just made me think of what you was talking about with the display, just kind of being mindful that you're not going back, spiraling back out of control, you know, out of control. So,
yeah, so I know really that my son is living in my mom's house right now. And he's got a picture of my mom and my dad up. And it's in the living room, and we pass by it every time okay. we walk through the door. So he's doing it as in memory of them, but it's a trigger for me sometimes when I walk in the house.
Uh-huh.
So it took me a long time to be able to go to the house.
Gotcha.
And so that's one of the reasons that I don't go, because that's a mm-hmm. trigger for me. You know.
Right. Yeah. That's understandable, though. It is, for sure. Because it just it's different. You know, you used to walking in and seeing her, and, you know, now it's like, right. okay, now I got a picture. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I could see that for sure. Yeah. But like you said, right. everybody's different, because it may help him seeing them as he's coming to and fro. So we just, and I think we all have to do what makes us comfortable and what makes us, you know, not be triggered and, Absolutely. You know, to stay and in a certain also, posture. So
I will also say that if you mm-hmm. need to talk to someone about grief counseling, to do that as well. There are people out there to help you navigate if you feel that you can't do it on your own. Navigate that with them. Also, if you don't have a prayer life, get one. Ask God to help you with this process. Because without God and the people that were surrounding me to help me, I don't think I would have made it. Because like I said, with my mom, it happened suddenly. We was together all that day, and then that night I get a call, Granny at the hospital can't breathe. What do you mean Granny at the hospital can't breathe? Granny is not breathing. What do you mean Granny is not breathing? So, you know, that just pulled the rug right. from under me. So one thing that I didn't do at first was go for the grief counseling, because I thought that I can do it on my own.
Okay.
But I found people that I could talk to okay. to help it. Navigate better. So
and I think it's different too, mm-hmm. Carla, when it is sudden like that, you know. It grief right. is hard, death is hard anyway, but when it's something that's so sudden and your day is just going like business as usual, and I tell people now that one phone call can change your life. And I don't think people, you know, if you've been through it, you know.
Absolutely.
how quick life can shift, and everything you done grew up knowing, learning, just is out the door. That was my experience. Because it is so sudden and such a shock. So, I understand 100%.
And also, when my mom passed, okay, they had put her on a ventilator that night because it was during the time that the bombing happened in Nashville and all the phones were down. So my son had to drive her to the hospital and she died on the way to the hospital in the car while he was driving. So they vented her. And so we couldn't go to the hospital with her. So when they pulled the plug on her, only two people could be at the hospital. So I let my brother go, who hadn't seen her in a couple of years, and I let my aunt go because I couldn't go.
Okay.
And do that. You know what I'm saying? But they had it to where we could watch it on Zoom.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't even watch it because I didn't want to see my mom take her last breath. You know what I'm saying? Wow. When they took the vent out. They said she was smiling. And probably was because she smiled all the time. But okay. I just couldn't do it because I already knew that she was gone before they took the plug out, if that makes sense. So.
Before they took it out. Yeah. That and that can be traumatic. So you did, and that you took care of yourself in that situation because you knew what you could and couldn't handle. And so that's commendable of you just to recognize that in yourself and kind of know what you know what you needed to do in that moment. Yeah, sound like two very special people, Carla.
Thank I love
for
my
sharing parents. About your parents. And
what,
I know it's
easier
not easy.
Now. It's easier now than in the beginning.
Okay.
Because like I said, with my dad, we expected it with the brain cancer. With my mom, I couldn't talk about it without crying. Now, 4 years later, it's better. It's a lot better. So I can talk about her and not cry. Yeah. Now, once we get off of here, I'll probably go cry. But right now, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, you give people hope, and for me, Carla, especially, and probably my cousins as well, if they see this, it's not always going to feel this way. You know what I'm saying? Because it's hard to even wake up some days, you know what I'm saying, and get going.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I'm sure you were there at some point, but what you're showing now is just like the resiliency of how you're, you know, you've been able to navigate it. And now you can speak about her without, you know, crying and, you know, all of the emotions that come behind it. So thank you for just being a picture of what that looks like. You know, once you start to kind of get on the
and I mean,
side
some days are hard, like Mother's Day is still a little hard, but I can go on. You know what I'm saying? Because I thought that this Mother's Day was going to be bad for me. But, you know, I was just able to say,
okay,
Mom, you good. You good, Mom. We good. Mama, we good. You know what I'm saying? So, and able to navigate that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to have days where it's ebb and flow, but just know that it will get better. It will get a whole lot
better. Yeah. So. Good. Well, amen to that. We're going to transition a little bit, Carla. So, I know an exciting thing happened last year in May for you. You accepted your calling into ministry. You preached your first sermon. I think I watched it virtually because I wasn't able to. I just couldn't do stuff at that point. You did a really good job. But I want to know, what has serving in ministry over this past year, what has it taught you? Have you learned anything about people or... What has it kind of taught you? Like, what does it look like navigating
ministry
in your
world? For me, it has shown me that people are people. Everyone is not the same. And people hold you to a higher standard than you hold yourself. And let me explain that. I was called in the ministry.
Okay.
I was. Okay. But I'm still Carla.
Right. Yes,
I'm still
yes.
me.
That's right. That's right.
I am not. I mean, God has changed the way that I look at things. God has changed the way that I maneuver. but I don't dwell in those titles. I'm still Carla.
Gotcha.
You
gotcha.
Might want to call gotcha. Me Minister uh-huh. Carla.
That makes sense.
But I'm just Carla. So don't put, don't put that to where you feel that I am up here and you're down here. That's not how we in this thing together, because that's what God wants. Ministry is us working alongside each other to build his kingdom. So, you know, that I have noticed that when people see me, Minister Walker, Minister Carla. No, I'm just Carla. You know, appreciate it. Don't put me on a pedestal, because I'm a servant just like you. I just stepped into where I speak to the people freely, but I'm just Carla. So,
I mean, like you say, you call it first, but you know. And like you say, a lot of people do get hung up in titles, but I mean, that's not even your personality. Like you say, to feel like, you know, you're here and there, like you just always want to be there to meet people where they are. And that's something I've known about you forever. So even stepping into ministry, that has not changed for you at all. Let me ask you this in relation to ministry and grief. Do you now view death and grief differently at all? Because I'm sure now you may have to go minister to a family, not preach a funeral or nothing, but like just, you know, we go to people's houses and people pass. Has that shifted your view on death and grief?
So it's still, meet people where they are. That's it. Doesn't change no matter the circumstance. I just meet them where they are. Because sometimes people just want you to be around just to be there. I can sit with you all day long. I can't tell you how you feel.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I can't tell you what you're going through. I could just be solid there with you. So just meeting it has shown me that I just have to be intentional about what I do when I come around people that may be grieving, to meet them where they are.
Makes sense. There are some that like a whole lot of people around.
Some that's like, I don't want anybody around. Some may want their pastor around. Some might not want their, you know what I'm saying? So you just got to be, I just got to learn to meet people where they are. Because grief and death is going to happen. That's one of those things, just like taxes. It's going to happen. It's just how you view it.
Going to happen.
You just how you view it. And for me, it's all about people where they are, you know.
And that's a good way of looking at it. You know, life in general, but also, like, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, just like you say, want to meet people where they are, no matter what the title is, just as a human, as a man, like whatever, you know, whatever your role is. Do you feel like you have a certain charge in ministry? You know, like how some people may be a minister of music, or they may be, you know, more in women's ministry or youth ministry. Do you feel like you're in any of those
my charge is for the African American churches to talk about mental health. When my son was going through his mental health crisis, I went to my preacher at the time and they said, pray about it. Talking about my son. When he had his mental health crisis, I was working in the field to where I knew a lot of the things that I needed. But when you're going through, you don't think about that. I went to my preacher, like I stated, and he said, pray about it. Okay, I pray. I've been praying his covering. I've been praying what I thought I needed to pray. But he's still going through. Mm-hmm. A lot of African American churches, that's the first thing that they go through and say, pray about it. Prayer works. God is a healer. God is a deliverer. God has set many, many people free. But there's another piece to that we need to discuss. So getting mental health help within the Black church is very important to me right now, because there are there are plenty of pastors, especially that had that's going through vicarious trauma, which is secondary trauma, because they hear a lot of things that they can't talk about, and they don't know who to talk to about it, or they don't have anybody to dump it on. So, and that's doing a disservice to their parishioners. So talking about mental health in the African-American church and letting people know that it's okay to receive it, as well as believing God, is my charge right now. And so I'm really, really trying to put the word out that it is okay not to be okay. And, you know, most people say we're going to stop the stigma of drug abuse, or we're going to stop the stigma of domestic violence. My thing is, we're going to stop the stigma. We're not, we're going to kill the stigma of mental health, because you can, you, as long as you talk about it, you're killing it. As long as it's kept dark, it's still growing. But the more we bring things to light, it's stopping it. It's killing it. So bringing to light that there is mental health within the church as well as outside of the church, but we need to be equipped in order to help anyone either way. So.
Yeah, that's true, Carla. And it's, I'm glad you're doing that, because you were right. It, you know, it's just, you know, it's kind of, you know how back in the day, a lot of your parents or whoever, it's like, what goes on in this house stays in this house. And it's similar to that when it comes to church too. Like, it, they want to keep everything quiet. And like I said, I'm going to just pray about it. But you know, you really, people are really dealing with like real issues, and they need the proper supports. And God puts these people in place, you know, to help us navigate, you know, the challenges of life. Yeah. So I think what you're doing is commendable and bringing the conversation forward. Because it's just one of them topics that a lot of people just want to stay buried, or, you know, back in the day, it was like, oh, this the crazy uncle. He in the back room. He don't ever come out. Right. Oh, he probably has some issues and nobody got no help. You know, like, and as people, we just go on like, yep, it's crazy. We go on about our business, not thinking nothing else about it. But it really, it does, it, it just said, it, it's just how it's been, and it's time out for it. So I think you're going to open a lot of people's eyes, and once we can change or, you know, just bring information, I guess, to preachers, ministers, just church leadership in general. That's kind of where that conversation is going to start, and hopefully be able to get gain some momentum and go somewhere.
Because I talked to several pastors here in town. We had a mental health summit last year. Just to bring the awareness that mental health is real. And so we're going to do it again this year, have a mental health summit. Because, like I say, the more we talk about it, it's not taboo anymore. The more you talk about a thing, it can't be hidden anymore. The more you talk about a thing, the more information that you can gain to help the next person, because you gather information most of the time, not for yourself, you gather it for somebody else. So this would be a way that if it is someone in your church that needs a counseling service and they can't pay for it, these are some services that they can go to receive free counseling. So, you know, just putting the information out there. And then we also need to change the narrative. No, we need to change the way that we talk to people about mental health. You can't call them crazy and expect for them to change. That's like calling them addict. They're not going to change. You know what I'm saying? So change the wording of how you address people that have a mental health issue. Everybody is not crazy. Everybody is not not off the rockers. Sometimes it's just simple a chemical imbalance. So there are things out there to help you get back aligned, but you would never know that if you don't take the time to talk to them, to see what's really going on and get them the help that's needed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think about when you're talking about, you know, calling, not calling people addicts and stuff, it's kind of like we need to use that person first language.
Absolutely.
Because it's kind of like even in childcare, you know, we always set our little rules of the classroom and it's like no walking, no this, no that. Well, all they're hearing is, they ain't even hearing the no, you know, they hearing run or whatever. So we switch it around and say walking feet. Oh, okay, well, I can compute walking feet. Oh, I need my feet to be walking, or listening ears, you know. Right. You know, quiet voices. And so anyway, that language matters. And when you're dealing with somebody, like you say, that's going through mental health struggles, addiction, whatever the case is, you know, we don't want to label. That's the biggest piece of what I was saying. We don't want to label people.
Absolutely.
And I also think, too, about ACEs, Carla. Oh. I know that's a big thing we talk about with our child care providers, mm-hmm. And how important, you know, even we're giving this information to, you know, church leadership, but have you dealt with your own?
Absolutely.
Do you even know what ACEs is? Do you know you may have 3 or 4 of
right.
them?
Right.
So really educate people on that too. And I know that's part of what you do.
Yes.
So it's a good conversation. Yeah.
So we're starting out slow this time. Last time we just had the mental health summit and nothing leading up to it. This time we're doing some training to lead up to the mental health summit. So we're doing the QPR training, which is the suicide training, to lead up to the mental health summit. The next training we're going to have is ACEs, PACEs, and HOPE. So ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, the things that happen to you before you turn 18. PACEs is those positive things and those positive people to help combat the ACEs that you receive. And then HOPE is healthy outcome from positive experiences. So even though you had those ACEs, the PACEs people came in and helped change you. And so the HOPE is the things that you're doing now to live a healthier life. So they all play a part in each other. And like I took the ACE study. And when I took the ACE questionnaire, I was really shocked. Because I had an ACE score of 5. And I grew up with both of my parents. But there were some things that happened in the house that I was like, OMG. So I had to look really just sit in that and be like, okay, so I don't want to bleed on the people. Mm-hmm. What can I do to help myself so that I can help somebody else? And like you said, people need to know what their ACE score is in order to help people. Because like you said, they could be having an ACE score of 8 or 9 and they're wondering why they're having health problems. It's because your A score is this high. All of that plays a part in health as well.
Yeah, it does. And it's kind of like the phrase, each one teach one, Carla. Like you say, you're learning and teaching and doing that along the way. So I appreciate you for dropping those gems and talking about some of the things you have forthcoming, because all of it is wrapped up in your ministry.
Absolutely.
You know, it really is. And speaking of that, I know JUMP is going to be having an event coming up in July. Do you want to talk about that a little bit with the audience while we're just going in that conversation of community stuff?
Absolutely. So I have a nonprofit called JUMP, Just Understanding My Purpose. This organization has, we've been doing the work since 2013, but we just got as a 501c3 within the last 2 years. And I'll just tell you a little bit of how JUMP came to be.
At
the time I was working at DCS and there were some families that needed Christmas. And I just called a couple of friends and said, hey, I got a couple of families that need Christmas. Can you guys help? They were able to help. The next year, the same thing, but the number was doubled. The first year was 25. The second year was 50. And so I was like, okay, this is becoming a pattern here. What do I need to do? So I have... During that time, I was just able to partner with a lot of people that saw the need of families in crisis at Christmas time and grandparents at crisis in Christmas time. Because the foster care kids, they get Christmas all day long. They're taken care of. But it's those that are out in the community, they have nothing to fall back on. This was before... Mm-hmm. Family Center had their program going. So we have just exploded with this as far as getting Christmas for families at Christmas time, because we do not want the grandparents, especially if they're raising their grandkids, have to choose between if they're going to buy medicine and groceries or get their grandkids something for Christmas. So we are having a fundraiser July the 12th at the Memorial Building at 6 o'clock. It's a bachelorette auction to raise money for this event, for the Christmas. Last year, we was able to help 577 kids with Christmas. That's our highest number. And we did that in a week's time. This year, our goal is 600 kids. So we asked for bare minimum information, because just because you drive up in an Escalade doesn't mean that you have money to buy Christmas. Because I don't know if you're living in that Escalade.
That's right.
And the way that our economy is going the way that our economy is going right now, the need is going to be even greater this year. So we are looking for people that may want to partner with us, that may want to donate with us. But the Bachelorette Auction is a great event, a fun event. You dress after five, semi-formal to formal. You bid on the bachelor or bachelorette. You don't have to go out on a date with them. You just get to hang out with them the night of the event. There's a $40 ticket for a single person, $60 for a couple before the event, but at the door, everybody price is $50. All the money goes towards the community toy store. I don't get to pocket any of the money. That's not what I do. That's not what Jim does. It's all feeds back into the toy store. Because, like I said, we want to help as many people as we can. There are people that are ashamed to come and shop. But like I tell people when they come in the doors, I'm always there. What I tell them when they come in the door, there's no judgment. I need you to hold your head up. Some people have been there. I was a mother that received assistance for Christmas when my kids was younger. So I know how it felt to get a garbage bag. Once you get the garbage bag home, it's not what your kids wanted or even their sizes. So the way that we have the toy store set up is just like a store. Their parents come in and shop for their kids. They get what they want for their kids. So that's where all the money go towards. It go towards making that event as special as possible. And we don't just go from kids 0 to 12. We even try to have something for the teens. So,
That's good.
So come out and support.
Yeah, the teen population. Yes. Y'all go support. And it's going to be at the Memorial Building
on July the 12th at 6 p.m. All the food and drinks you want for $40 for those that like to drink. Food and drinks, $40. night long. We don't put it up until the end. We have two great MCs. We have Marcel Fleming, which is my youngest son. He will be an MC for the event, as well as Ginger Wales Smith. So if you've never been in the presence of those two clowns, you need to come and laugh, because it's going to be laughter all night long.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a good time for sure. A really good time. Well, Carla, thank you for telling us about that. And I'll make sure it gets in the description of the video. And we'll repost the flyer as well. Okay. Start getting it promoted out even the more. So I know we're wrapping up. And I want to ask you, I got two questions I'm going to ask you. I think we done promoted everything.
Okay.
Okay. Question one is, what daily practices help keep you just in alignment? Or just rooted, grounded, all of that. What are some daily things you do just to keep yourself going?
So every morning between 4 and 5, God wakes me up. And I have to start my day with him. Listening to gospel music. I am in the process of reading the Bible again from cover to cover. I read the Bible twice, but I didn't read it for understanding. I just read it like a book. You know what I'm saying? So now I am taking the time to read chapter by chapter, soaking in that word, letting God tell me what I need to get from that word. Meditate on the word, pray over the word, and let him download whatever. So first and foremost, I spend the first part of my morning with him. Secondly, I that includes prayer. Secondly, I have to, before I go into my internship placement, I have to have that stillness time for me, like 5 minutes of just quietness, because I know once I step through those doors, it's over. So just quietness. I just need just quietness. So I take the time just to sit still and be quiet. And then just pour into people. You know, God pour into me so that I can pour into people. So just pouring into people and loving them where they are, because we see in my internship, we see a lot of broken people. And to the point to where they feel that they're less than and that they never amount to anything. So I pour into them so that they can pour into someone else to put that glimmer back in their light, because some of them just have been devastated for many, many, many years and they don't know how to smile anymore. So I smile so that they can smile, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. I like you giving them hope. And then you also, like you say, giving them something to go pour into someone else with when they probably don't even realize that I can even do this. So I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, my final question. So as you know, your cousin was all into music. And I ask everybody, if you could have a song be your life story, what would it be and why? And most people do two songs, so if you got two, I'm gonna throw that out there.
So there was a song when I was younger that my daddy used to play all the time, and the song was called Wildflower by Tyrese. Has a remix of it now that's out. That song resonates with me because, again, I was the only girl. I had five brothers, so I was rough and tumble. And, you know, when I got with my boyfriend, I was like, I can change a tire, I can change my oil, I could possibly put in a carbonator. Don't want to, but I can do that if I need to.
Got the skills.
Right, because I had to do what they did. But as time progressed, I developed into a lady. And so that song is basically talking about a wildflower growing wild in the weeds, but she is now turning into a lady. So after 53 years, you know what I'm saying? I see myself turning into a lady, not that rough and tumble. Yeah. You do, I'm going to do you before you do me mentality. You want to fight? Let's get them up. You know? So.
Right.
So that's one song. And my next song is Never Would Have Made It. Because of all the things that I have gone through in my life, from being a teenage mother at 16, being another teenage mother at 17, and then being another mother at 23, people said that I never was going to amount to anything. I went on to college to get my degree, you know, because I'm supposed to be a statistic of having three kids out of wedlock. I'm supposed to be living in the projects, receiving food stamps every day, you know, not no disrespect to that. But my second song would be Never Would Have Made It, because for the things that I've gone through, being a single mother three times, never married, I'm supposed to be in the projects. I'm never supposed to, I was not supposed to get a college degree. I never supposed to work for the state. I never was supposed to, you know, there's all the things that I never was supposed to do. But I know God had me covered through it all in order for me to do his work. And so I know never would have made it. I never would have made it without him guiding my life, and guiding me through all the things that I didn't see there was a hindrance, that I thought I was having a good time, but didn't realize my life was in danger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, gotcha.
Driving drunk, and I should have wrecked, but he kept me. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Never Would Have Made It is my second song.
Never Would Have Made It. That's a good one. That's a good one. That's a real good one right there. I think somebody else said Never Would Have Made It when I asked them that question. So I appreciate you, Carla. Thank you for coming on and just being so open and so honest. I want to congratulate you early congratulations. As you mentioned, you're in school to get your master's in clinical mental health counseling. So I want to say an early kudos and an early congratulations to you. I know this journey probably has not been easy, as most things are, but I guess with God and, you know, just your tenacity and keep going, like, you are almost to the finish line. So I want to say congratulations to you.
But what's so funny, I signed up to start school, I was grieving at that time. And before I knew it, I had got an acceptance letter. And I was like, what the world I done got myself into? So I'm not a quitter. So I had to finish the course.
You had to finish the course. Yeah. Do you think that propelled you into considering? Yeah. Do you think that propelled you into considering, like, going into this new, I don't want to say it's a new career path, because it's in such alignment with what you currently do. But did that kind of prepare you to go that direction and pursue this new degree?
Absolutely. Because like I said, I was grieving. I had got the certification to be a life coach. I have that. I have a certification as a mindful coach as well. Did that. Okay. And I said, I'm still not being fulfilled. What else do I need to do? So, like I said, I was just scrolling through, and then I filled out the application, not thinking that I was going to get in, because I've been out of school for 17 years.
I was like,
okay, daddy, it's me and you, father, because my brain is gone.
Purpose. You're living in purpose, on purpose. That's for sure, true. Carla. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, all righty. Well, we're going to wrap this thing up. One thing your cousin Quinn used to always say was all is well. So I try to end every episode with saying all is well. Thank you again, Carla, for being on. I really appreciate it. And we'll get all of your stuff in the description of everything you got going on. But just keep fighting on. Keep everything up that you're doing. Like I said, you're such an example for myself, you know, such a leader, such a mentor, and I just appreciate you. I hope you all have a good rest of your week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Thank you again. Bye.
We hope that today's episode has encouraged you and helped to identify strategies to navigate your grief and begin the process of moving forward in life. Grief Tribe, Healing Vibes. What were some key takeaways from today's episode? Drop a comment below and remember to like, follow, and subscribe.